Welcome back to Download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. Well, my next guest is a proud activist, advocate, and agitator. Andy Thayer is a man who has dedicated his life's work to equality, fairness, and human rights. And his skill? Andy is the man behind some of the biggest modern-day protest movements Chicago has seen. Whether it's the March Against the Iraq War that took over Lakeshore Drive in 2003 and saw over 800 protesters arrested, to organizing protests against the NATO summit in 2012, Andy's been the leader of the anti-war protest movement, not just in Chicago, but around the globe. Just this weekend, he participated in two different protests, one solidarity march on Michigan Avenue for those who opposed the Dakota Pipeline, to participating in the festivities surrounding the Trump Tower since the election last week. Andy Thayer is the co-founder of the Gay Liberation Network, and he joins me in studio. Andy, thanks for being here. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me in.
I mean, right away, we see in the last week, we've seen protests, not just in Chicago, but we've seen it in Portland, other places, Seattle, New York, all the big cities around the country. And you'll hear people come out of the woodwork, not only pundits on TV, but on social media, saying, this is just sour grapes. This is sore losers. Democrats didn't win the election, so this is how they how do you respond to that characterization?
Well, I think it's very interesting because probably most of the people, if not all of them, that are saying that weren't down to any of the demonstrations and talked to the people who are at them the way that I was fortunate to do in the first night as well as this past Saturday. And the thing that struck me about it was this was not disaffected Hillary voters from what I could tell. I mean, there was nary a right word facing H in any of these demonstrations. Instead, these were homemade signs about people saying the voices of our abusers is now in the presidency. I mean, I'm paraphrasing here, but a young woman was holding that sign, which I thought was particularly poignant. And people who were frankly afraid of being deported because they're undocumented youth. And that was the thing that really struck me about this demonstration. I was by far one of the oldest people there, and I'm only 56, okay? Probably the median age was low 20s, and there were a number of people who identified themselves in an informal speak out right near Lakeshore Drive as being 15-year-olds. Mm-hmm. And so we're talking about people who are not even old enough to vote, but frankly have got much more at stake in the future than people my age or a decade or two younger.
You think about it. I mean, there's always been a youth movement when it comes to protests, and you've been around the movements, as I mentioned in the lead, from the war in Iraq to NATO to other things. But for you, when you visualize, you see the kids that are coming out to protest in front of the Trump Tower this week, both on the weekend and right after Election Day. Are these familiar faces to you? Is it the same kind of protester that's come out for other things in the past, or is this something new?
It's actually much younger than I've seen recently. I mean, the Black Lives Matter protests here in Chicago have been predominantly young. This was even younger than a whole number of them. I mean, this was literally high school kids coming out in anger. I mean, we've seen high school walkouts right around the country. These are people who are, frankly, with good reason, pissed off at their elders because the elders chose both of these lousy candidates. And I need to emphasize that I am no Hillary supporter, not even a Bernie supporter, because I saw Bernie is basically funneling people into the Democratic Party so as to basically give her their votes to the eventual nominee. And so I think that, I mean, I heard a couple of young women in the speak out that I mentioned who said with disgust in their voice, this isn't about Clinton. They were people who were disgusted that we had a lousy choice in 2016, thanks to both major parties, and were disgusted that basically their elders had sold them down the river. Because as much as you may hate Trump about his threats to deport people, it was President Obama who deported over 2 million.
But is that, I mean, for you,
the Black Lives Matter protest rose largely against Democratic Party mayors.
So I'm, you know that. Right. I mean, you know that you've been around protests and you see pundits and even mainstream media and articles. And like I said, even on social media, people really trying to categorize this as sour grape Democrats.
So they can dismiss it. And I would point out that really post-election protests are not just about sour grapes. Maybe sometimes they are, but I think this time they were not. And the example that one of the examples I would point to is 2008, the passage of Proposition 8 in California. Now, here, sitting in my perch in the Midwest, I initially said, oh, what are these people protesting about? Why didn't they do it before the election when they could have swayed things? Well, as it turns out, the mainstream NGOs, the liberal dead weight of proper organizations. They actually discouraged protests, particularly against the Mormon Church, even though it was known that the Mormon Church was pushing this rabidly anti-gay Proposition 8.
This was in California. This was the anti-gay measure, right?
That's correct. But I think any correct history, especially in retrospect, of what happened with how we won equal marriage rights for LGBT people has got to point out the signal value of the pushback against not just the Mormon Church, but the Catholic hierarchy, which is something I was involved with here in Chicago, that it was labeling people who were against equal rights as bigots. That once we were successful in convincing a majority of Americans that if you're against equal rights for an entire group of people, you are by definition a bigot, we had won. And that's what those anti-Prop 8 post-vote demonstrations helped us build to.
There's been so much made about the protests surrounding big cities. Obviously, the big cities from Seattle to New York to Chicago, the blue state. This is where the liberal vote is. Why aren't these protests happening in rural areas, in red states, in other places where kids are affected by it? I mean, they obviously are disenfranchised. Why aren't there more pushback on Donald Trump, the things that he said, in places where it's not big cities?
Frankly, it's scary to be out at a demonstration in a small town. I grew up in a town, one stoplight town, upstate New York, and I knew that I was gay at the time, but I wasn't going to go out and protest about it. You would have been taking my life in my own hands. And certainly you can say that about black youth in particular, other people of color, that it takes a higher degree of courage than anything I have to muster as a middle-aged white man to get out on a demonstration in this country, in the streets of Chicago, let alone in a small rural town where there aren't a lot of people watching if something happens to you by some bigot.
Mm-hmm. Andy Thayer's my guest. We'll take a quick break here. We'll come back. I want to talk about, when we think about American history and the history of protest, what we're seeing this week and is not new. It's something that is rooted in what we saw in the movement in the 60s. We saw when President Nixon was elected. There's a lot in there, and I want to talk to you about your thoughts about the history of protest movement and what makes a successful protest to push politicians off of their ideology. Andy Thayer is an advocate, an activist. He's the co-founder of the Gay Liberation Network and a main player here in Chicago when it comes to the anti-war protest movement in town. All right, we'll take a break. Stay with us. Welcome back to The Download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Coffin. My guest, Andy Thayer. He's in studio. He is a anti-war protest activist, also an advocate. He co-founded the Gay Liberation Network. Something you wrote about, and you're writing about this constantly, was the concept that this movement, this pushback at Donald Trump from young people from the streets in Chicago, Seattle, New York, it's not necessarily just about 2016. It's something that we've seen before. You go all the way back to 68, 69, when the country was also given poor choices for leaders.
Absolutely. I was pointing out to some of the youth the other night, on last Wednesday night, that it was just a few blocks away from here that the Democrats Party under Richard J. Daley busted a lot of heads while at the same time it was literally bludgeoning to the tune of millions of people in Southeast Asia. And that caused a sea change in an opinion amongst youth. They'd already rejected the Republicans who had nominated Tricky Dick Nixon. And this caused the leading sectors of the anti-war movement, mainly white youth, to reject the Democrats as well.
And, the party that needed the young people to vote for them. They had rejected the principles.
The slogan of SDS at the time had been half the way with LBJ. And this led to a sea change in opinion such that people rejected both parties, at least a layer of folks that were most active. And that actually led to an upsurge in activism and led to the Nixon administration, despite being led by a raunch, racist, anti-Semite, warmonger, sexist. Go down the list. This is a guy who was forced to begin winding down the Vietnam War after a few years. He was forced to sign things like the Clean Air and Clean Water Act. He was forced to sign things like food stamps into law. He was forced to sign
things.
And you
say because of the protest movement.
Because of the protest movement. He was, you read the transcripts of the Nixon White House. This guy was a bigot through and through, far more ideological, frankly, than Donald Trump. He was much more committed to these reactionary ideas even than Trump is. I mean, Pence is might be a closer analogy to Nixon. And yet he was forced to become, in practice, a far more liberal president than, frankly, Obama or any other post-World War II president.
Right.
It was because the protest movement in the streets. And the key thing was that activists had chosen to become independent. It was a historical concatenation of forces. You saw the same thing also in the run-up to the 1963 March on Washington, where the elder a generation of African-American activists have been solid Republicans the same way that they're solid Democrats right now. The younger generation, King Jr. et al., rejected the Republicans because they hadn't seen anything out of them since the Civil War, frankly. So you had this birth of independence within the movement thanks to historical circumstances. And that's why I'm actually, in spite of as much as I totally loathe both the Republicans and the Democrats and all the candidates they're putting up, both locally as nationally, we have got a unique opportunity today here as people who believe in civil rights, who believe that Black Lives Matter, who believe in fighting the wars that they've droned on, no pun intended, for the last three administrations, that we have got a real opportunity to build an independent movement that is historically what brought us the gains that we take advantage of.
I agree with you, and I think that you might be seeing a little bit that on the right as well. Donald Trump is a candidate that was chosen outside of the establishment. The establishment doesn't know what to do with it. I'm interested in, as you know, you put aside some of the ideology and obviously some of the really vicious rhetoric that's been from the campaign, do you see an opportunity in which Andy Thayer and a protest movement could see eye to eye with a Trump administration that might push back a little bit on the way that politicians have run this country for the last century?
Oh, I think Trump is an utter hypocrite. I don't see us seeing eye to eye any more than I would see Richard Nixon. No, I think he's a vile race. He is an opportunist. That is his single most thing. And the other thing is he's frankly got the attention span of a gnat, according to his real biographer.
But the concept of let me put this way, a concept of a candidate and now a president-elect like this. Let's say that it's not Donald Trump. Let's say that it's Bernie Sanders. Let's say it's someone else that we don't know about that is rejecting party politics and trying to do something that is new for this country. Is that something that you're looking for from America?
Well, I mean, from a Trump administration, I think he's solely into himself. Yeah. He's solely into the power of his class. I mean, he's approaching it from a different standpoint than the Democrats and the mainstream Republicans, but he's not anyone that anyone could have any illusions about allying with who's concerned with civil rights. I mean, he is a rank opportunist, and if it means, you know, victimizing immigrants, if it means victimizing women, et cetera, he's clearly capable of doing. My point is that we don't have to accept what the crap, if I may use that term, that he dishes out any more than we should accept it from the Democrats.
I really enjoyed you wrote about this, and it was part of the same concept of what happened with Nixon in 1968, 1969, that there was this concept, and you kind of alluded, you showed video on your Facebook page of everybody kind of walking down Columbus. They're just, you know, 5 minutes away from being able to take thousands of people onto Lakeshore Drive, and there's nothing that the police can do to stop them. But yet, it's orderly, it's prim, it's proper, they're moving around, they're letting. Mm-hmm. But there was something about what happened after the 1968 riots in Grant Park that organizers, protesters, they went a little further. They went a little bit more in I don't want to use the word anarchy, but they went to a point where you saw Days of Rage, you saw the Weather Underground, you saw more, I guess, spontaneous protest.
Well, you saw that in the wake of the release of the Laquan McDonald video, and as much as Rahm tries to control everything in this town, he was unable to. He knew. He was smart enough a politician. He knew that if he tried to do things like enforce the parade permit ordinance that he had made much worse in the run-up to the NATO conference. I mean, now that, frankly, Section 10-8-3 32, I believe it's from the Chicago Municipal Code, is ignored by most people, and with good reason, because it was rancid to begin with. He made it much worse. And when authority figures like that try and clamp down, sometimes people, if they have the confidence, will just blow past it. And that's what people have been doing in this town since the Laquan McDonald video release. And it's very, you compare it to the way that protests have been historically locked down in cities like New York for the past couple of decades. It's very refreshing that people can push back against these laws when they see their own mayor covering up for the murder of an African-American young man. Why should anyone else respect the laws these jokers passed.
Do you think that, I mean, that's a good place to pick up for Rahm Emanuel in the city of Chicago. Do you believe that the protest movement, especially around the killing of Laquan McDonald, has affected change? You've seen the mayor.
Absolutely. It was totally reflected in the streets. And I made a mention in an article I just wrote that while there was very little organizational presence from either Black Lives Matter organizations or immigrant rights organizations, the ideologies of those organizations, which I've had the pleasure to work with in a supportive role, that their ideas suffused the crowds from the Wednesday night huge protest that took Lakeshore Drive onwards, that the ideas have suffused working class youth in this town. And that is an extremely positive development.
Do you feel, as the protest movements continue to take shape and have some fuel, as we saw over the weekend against Donald Trump in different parts of the cities and kids walking out from high schools and other, are you optimistic that protest movement will have some effect on a Donald Trump administration, move them to the center, almost like what happened with President Nixon?
I think it's the only hope we've got. I mean, the Democrats, for anyone who had any fealty to them that really cares about civil rights, should be rejecting them right now. And frankly, the youth are way ahead of a lot of people who had fealty to the Democrats prior to November 8th. I think it's not just a question of moving Donald to the center. I think it's changing the whole paradigm. I mean, you take the issue of homelessness. All the programs that we see proposed by the neoliberals are about, well, let's just tinker around the edges. Whereas in the 1930s in this country, we saw things like Lathrop homes get built. We saw massive housing projects in New York City, rent control, the sort of things that actually build huge stocks of affordable housing that actually, using market capitalism, lower the rates, not just for those folks, but everyone in the city that's working class, because there's much more affordable housing. Today, the idea of supporting low-income housing is, oh, we're going to use DFSS to put you in touch with someone who may have a unit, perhaps. But it's not actually expanding the base of housing. Same thing about jobs. I heard of the Tribune was the other day ballyhooing this program about an outfit that put ex-offenders and so forth in touch with employers. Okay, very good for those folks, but you're not expanding the actual job base for those folks the way that the Works Progress Administration did in the 1930s. And that was a direct result of things like the three general strikes that happened in this country in 1934. It was a direct result of people occupying all the major workplaces in this country. That's a kind of radical direct action that we need if we're going to actually change, flip the script from not, let's just make Donald a more moderate Clintonite or Romney-like politician, but let's totally change the script.
Andy Thayer is an activist, an advocate, and also an anti-war protester here in Chicago. He's also the co-founder of the Gay Liberation Network. Andy, thanks for being here. You got to come back. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks so much, Justin.